Hello and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. Feels like 100 years since I've been here, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How did I do last week with the intro and outro when you were... did I nail it? Did I mostly get it?
It needs some work. But here's the thing. Like somebody pointed it out on, like, I think it was YouTube or maybe it was Twitter. I'm not sure. Somebody pointed out, like, the intro, you know, the revolves around the evolver, the whole shabam. And I was like, you know, Sean has done it maybe like 3 times out of the 160 episodes that we've ever done. So it's like, of course I've got it down. Like, I've said it for almost 160 straight weeks, pretty much.
But you know what's funny? I've heard it for 160.
Yeah, you hear it a lot. You know, like, I hear a lot of things, but they just don't really go in through my head. Like, they just go in one ear and out the other. So, like, I totally get it. But anyways, you did great, Sean. It was a good episode last week. Really, really enjoyed it. For those of you that have not heard the episode, we brought on a former world champion, 2018 Masters World Champion Robin Scholes, on the podcast to talk about a lot of good things. It was a really cool one to hear. I couldn't be a part of it. The time difference is just, it's a little too much being on the West Coast now, but that is all fine and dandy. But Sean, we've got a lot to talk about today. There was an event that happened this past weekend, which was very, very exciting. A lot of things that went down. And now that we're in the Paradox Rift format, Sean and I are going to kind of talk a little bit more of a discussion instead of various news topics about the Paradox Rift format. So we'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the episode. But Sean, did you play any Pokemon over the weekend?
Not really. I went and hung with friends and played with them on Friday. Super casual, not even at a league, just at my friend's place. So that was... That was cool. That's about it.
Nothing. No, that was it.
I will say there's one deck that I'm thinking of rebuilding though, because I'm like, I was thinking about this. I'm like, we have Countercatcher now. What deck could I build? And
The Fortress?
Yes. Yes. And also I need to check. Okay. Let me quickly check Fortress, because I need to see if it can attach grass energy to any Pokemon, or if it can only attach it to grass.
Because you can do it on Arceus, right?
Yes,
when
you're right.
When the Arceus Fortress deck?
Yes, that's what I had before. So I'm thinking of Fortress, and I'm like, oh, you have Countercatcher. We have Iona, right? If I build it the same way that I built the deck originally, we have also evolution in, the Evolution TM.
Oh,
huge,
yeah, that's right,
huge
actually.
For that deck. So I'm like, okay, and then grass weakness, which we'll talk about in a bit, is really good. So I'm like, I could even play Iron Hands in this deck, accelerate grass energy onto Iron Hands, and then attach lightning energy directly. I have a thought in my head of an anti-meta deck where, like, going second, I just put my opponent, like I was trying to before with, like, Roxanne or Iona, down to a few cards in hand. Take a few prizes, maybe use some super effective glasses, I don't know, in the right matchup. You know, but I'm like, you know, imagine being able to hit you know, Lugia, because it's lightning week, with Iron Hands, with super effective glasses for 360 damage.
Yeah, you wallop that thing and you what, 3 prizes?
Yeah, I'll just take 3 prizes. It's fine. We're fine. It's cool.
Arvin's really popular.
Let me just go grab that Lumineon that you put onto the bench, whatever deck I'm playing against. I don't know. I think a Fortress anti-meta deck with Countercatcher is, like, actually really viable now. And so I'm just like, So anyways.
When that list comes out, you can check out the Metapod podcast, because I'm sure Sean and I will talk about it once he wins 13 cups, you know, in this upcoming weekend, you know, traveling out all across the country to compete. But there's a lot of fun decks that are going on right now in Paradox Rift. There's a wide, wide meta that's going on right now. And this past weekend, Stuttgart. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong. Regionals happened over in Germany. It was almost 1,000 different players in this event, 982. So pretty big European regional, I would say. Very, very cool in there. And if you look at the limitless.tcg, or I'm sorry, limitlesstcg.com, if you look at the statistics page on there, it breaks down, I believe, the top 64 decks, or I'm sorry, 98, top 98 decks from the event. Day two players, yeah, top 96. And in there, if you look at the statistics in terms of the share and things like that, in day two, it was actually pretty evenly spread across definitely three different decks. You had Giratina taking up a little over 15% of the day two meta, Gardevoir tying it actually at the same rate, so the same amount of decks, which, when was the last time we heard of a tie for the top spot in a meta share, Sean?
Yeah.
I feel like it's been a long time.
Definitely been a minute.
But not only that, just a little under 1% in terms of the top two decks at 14.29%. Maridon for the third place spot. And Charizard also had double digit percent at 12.24. So right there, the top four decks all add 10% or above meta share. And then you have Lost Zone Box, which I think encapsulates all but like Giratina decks.
Mm-hmm.
All the different Lost Zone decks that we could talk about.
Yep, Sablezard and the other weird stuff.
Yeah, which we'll get to the weird stuff because there was a really cool top four list. That took up a 9% of the meta share. So overall, in my opinion, really, really good diversity, I feel like, in terms of the format. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I fully agree. Yeah, this is it's cool. It's cool stuff. But the winner of the tournament, which we'll briefly just chat about, was... I'm going to pronounce it. Is it Christian Fontenot?
I think that's how you say it. Okay. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't actually know. It says this country is Denmark, but point being, you know, not a typical English last name, but, you know, it's close enough. But he was running Sablezard, Lost Box Charizard. Mm-hmm. The last match, I did watch the finals. You know, shout out to Simon, second place player. Just got a little unlucky at the very end there of the first game, and then the second game was a donk. But mm-hmm. Congrats to Christian. It's not just one round, you know, round of three. It's an entire tournament of like 16 rounds, so no small feat. But yeah, overall, I don't think that the specific shakeout of the top tables was particularly surprising. Not surprising. There was a couple of decks here and there, but I don't know. I think there's like solid like five or six decks that can win any tournament at this point, Jake.
I would agree with that as well. And again, talking about the diversity, I just think it's all very matchup dependent on what, like, on where you get in, especially when you get to the top eight, of like what your bracket looks like, right? You could be the best call of the deck in the room, right? Like, let's say Lost Box was the best play, but you could face up against like a Maridon Iron Hands. I don't know if that's a great matchup, to be honest, but it has Iron Hands in it, so it's got to be all right. So that could just be unlucky, and it could be the only one in the room, if that makes sense. So really, really cool to see Christian's list. If we open up Christian's list on the Sablezard list, this is most of, I would say, very, very typical of what we've seen in Sablezard list. You know, you got your Lost Zone engine with the Colriss, Comfey, Sableye, Cramorant, the whole package, Mirage Gate. But the Mirage Gate is really interesting in this build because you're only playing one Mirage Gate. That's something very interesting, but makes a ton of sense in my opinion. Because if you look at this list, if you look exactly, I'll give the line of the Pokemon, right? Because Mirage Gate is played for the line of the Pokemon. Four Comfey, two Sableye, two Cramorant, one Manaphy, one Jirachi, one Spiritomb, and one Radiant Charizard. The only Pokemon that you want to Mirage Gate to is Radiant Charizard. And you probably only need a Mirage Gate on that Radiant Charizard like once.
Yep.
And it's probably like after your opponent has taken two prizes, right? Because like you know, your early game, you're using Cramorant. You might have given up another early prize in the beginning. Iron Hands is pretty prevalent. And so after your Cramorant, you could go into Sableye and then swing finish with Radiant Charizard. So really, really cool idea of Lost Box. I think this is probably like one of the first times that we've seen Lost Box decks not play like a lot of Mirage Gates for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because they've usually played with like Giratina or something like that.
Yeah, it's very interesting because it's like, it's such a powerful card that like, mm-hmm. why wouldn't I just want access to it more often? And I guess to your point, the reality is you're playing double turbo, you're playing Raihan in this list. Mm-hmm. So you have ways to get more than one energy onto this Charizard pretty easily. You're playing Pal Pads so that you can put back in a Raihan or a Roxanne or whatever. So odds are, yeah, to your point, the first turn or two, you might set up a little damage with Cramorant. Maybe you get into Sableye by turn two or three. But after that, it's, you know, matchup dependent. But generally speaking, it's kind of the Charizard party. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a cool deck. I'm always amazed at people who can get a deck like this rolling because it just feels to me like, yeah, Comfy and Colress draws you a lot of cards. But outside of that, there's actually not a lot of card draw in the deck. So I don't know. I could imagine myself playing this deck and just bricking so hard. Which like, oh, I think that actually is what happened to Christian in the first game mm-hmm. of the finals. He had just a really rough opener, but was able to, you know, come back late with a clutch counter catcher.
There's other stuff in this deck as well. Counter catchers, like you mentioned, I think counter catcher is just a really, really good card because you're not running boss in this list. You're either using Colress, Raihan, or Clara every single turn, and that's it. So no room for boss. Counter catcher, a great inclusion, but also very interesting because a lot of people panicked about this card when it first was announced and revealed. But this is we have now seen it in a list, especially one that has topped. It is TM Devolution. I think this is a really cool card, especially Hello Cat has appeared on Sean's screen. It's a really, really cool list, and especially Sablezard, I feel like, because not only do you have, like you were mentioning, the Cram Punches, the Sableye Pings, things like that, but you also have Charizard. There are still things in the format, cards that we'll get to later, that have over 250 HP. So the TM Devolution is a really, really cool aspect and a really, really cool way to just take a whole bunch of knockouts after attacks from a bunch of different people. I do have to ask because I haven't watched the VOD. I didn't watch the VOD at all. Did he actually use the TM Devolution in the in at least the finals?
No, because he played against Maridon. So the only thing to devolve there would be Flaffy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's not really
I forgot
point.
About that.
But I can tell you what the TM Devolution is probably the most useful in. Okay. And that is Charizard EX. Otherwise, Charizard EX just, it sounds crazy, but it kind of just farms these Lost Box decks because, I mean, having played it myself, everything on your board is just so enormous that mm-hmm. by the time you end up knocking anything out, even with Radiant Charizard, it's taking you 2-3 turns to get a two prizes, and that prize trade math just doesn't work. Like, you will take 4, maybe 5 prizes by the time they take all 6, and it's just the numbers are too big. So TM Devolution, though, that's why, like, that in that matchup you probably play it a little differently, where you like just do some setup, take your time, then come in with a TM Devolution when you have everything that probably is only a Charmander, which is 60 HP, I think, or 70 maybe.
Because Charizard, and this is a really big point, Charizard really relying on rare candy.
Yep, that's exactly right. So you just come in there with that, you just clean up all the attackers in kind of one go, and mm-hmm. then you say, what can you do now? And like, they might have a Radiant Charizard, but like, you can deal with that. That's fine.
So, and it's like, and especially like, okay, maybe you're taking like all these knockouts and they're on all these little Charmanders and you might only take 3 prizes instead of 6, you know, because you're de-evolving 2 prize Pokemon into 1 prize Pokemon. But I think, kind of like what you're talking about, the advantage goes so far after that point where you're just like to your opponent, okay, what do? You know, like it just swings it so far in your favor that, okay, now you can start cleaning up with the Sableye, with the Cram, with the Charizard, you know, stuff like that. So really, really interesting.
So Jake, there was one other deck, and this will get us in, I think, into our next, like the big topic of the day, which is Jake and I were talking about this before the pod, and we were like, there's not a lot of news. Like, what do we want to talk about today? We just have this regional. And you know, we were thinking, well, maybe it would be a good episode to talk about surprises and flops. Like whenever a set comes out, especially one like Paradox Rift, a lot of cards were really hyped, a lot of people were really afraid about certain cards like Devolution TM. So like what we'll go through like what decks we were the most surprised by that have like come out of the woodwork and just kind of, I don't know, like been really good. Nobody really expected that. And then what decks were like either super hyped going into this format that just have nothing, have no presence whatsoever. So I think to start with surprise, I do want to talk about Christian Hodas's list, which is the fourth place list. And I want to say, I will say this. I think this list, in some aspects, took some inspiration from Tord's list. So I have it pulled up on the screen here on YouTube, but for those of you listening, it is a Lost Box toolbox
Box.
slash counter deck. Yeah, it's
We call it the
very
Lost Box deck, you
yes.
know.
It's just a complete anti-meta deck. It uses the Lost Zone engine in order to draw cards and then to power up a variety of different attackers with different energy, all of whom are kind of designed to either hit for weakness or hit in situations where you will have an advantage in that circumstance. So like Iron Hands if you're facing another Lost Box deck, Roaring Moon if you're facing anything with dark weakness or anything enormous. You have, which these are the interesting ones. You have a grass type basic single prizer in Tropius, which has a two energy attack rally back. And if any of your Pokemon were knocked out, which is very likely, you do 90 more. So it's 120. But Jake, if I'm only doing 120 with a grass Pokemon, how does that matter?
Because you hit for a weakness and do 240.
But
And
if you
so
have a
you can.
Charizard, how do you kill Charizard at 240?
Well, you're cram punching it first.
Well,
Or
actually,
you're
Jake.
using Radiant Greninja on it. Or there might be some other options, as
Well,
you're
yeah.
alluding to.
Yes, the super sneaky thing here is a card I don't think we've ever
Oh,
seen
yeah, that's
played
right.
is super effective glasses. So like, you know, you think weakness. What doesn't that mean you're already super effective? No, you can be even more effective. This is an item, a tool card specifically, that allows you to apply weakness damage as times three instead of times two. So that Tropius, this little old Tropius coming in here smacking a Charizard for 360 damage. Easy.
Very, very cool inclusion in this deck. You're running two of them,
Yeah.
two of these bad boys, and can pretty much help you in a lot of different situations. There's also another guy in their
Yeah.
Minior hitting the fighting weakness because of Snorlax stall, I would assume,
Well,
being able
also,
to rush into the active. But what?
Iron Hands.
Iron Hands. What's Iron Hands? So for anyone who's not sure, maybe didn't hear our podcast episode last week, Minior does more damage 20 times based on the amount of active Pokemon's retreat cost. Iron Hands has four retreat costs, so that is 160 after the regular super effective, but 320
Yep.
on the super effective glasses. So huge brain move, actually.
I think it's, I want to say, I actually think it's 240 because it's three times
240,
80. So it'd be 240,
three
but
times
still.
eight. Oh, yeah. Anyways,
But
it's
still.
taken the knockout.
Yep.
Very, very big deal.
So, like, there's a few really sneaky cards. Like, yes, Minior, it's doing double duty in this deck. It's like both there to just slap Snorlax, and it's also there to slap Iron Hands. Like, your opponent. You're playing a sort of single prizer deck. Your opponent might get that Iron Hands up and be like, haha, I got this. And then instead of you having to be like, well, I guess I gotta go Roaring Moon. No, little old Minior just coming in and slapping Iron Hands right across the face.
Taking the cake, that Shooting Star. In this list that they play, they do have two town stores in there to help you find your tool cards. You're only playing three tool cards, the Super Effective Glasses and the Forest Seal Stone, but all three of those are very, very important, I feel like, in this deck. When you have multiple cards, three cards potentially, mm-hmm. that could really, really utilize those. It also plays a card that we haven't seen in a while, Sean, I will say, because of one deck's downfall, well, two decks' downfall, I will say, that utilize this. It also plays Gift Energy, Sean. Gift Energy, colorless energy. If the Pokemon this card is attached to is knocked out by damage from an opponent's attack, draw cards until you have seven in your hand. So you have a lot of Pokemon that can utilize this Gift Energy. In Roaring Moon requiring a colorless energy, Iron Hands requiring one, a couple other Pokemon that we can talk about that I don't think we've mentioned yet, and a couple other V's teched in this, your Tropius and your Minior. And even Radiant mm-hmm. Greninja, if you decide, or no, you don't have water energy, so not Radiant Greninja, but it could be literally anything that you send up to just, like, doll, potentially, and draw. Like, you leave a Comfey in the active to be knocked out, Gift Energy onto it, all right, you'll still draw cards off of it. So, very, very cool, I will say, inclusion. Really helpful in drawing what you need.
Yep. No, it's a great deck. I think one other card that you mentioned that you think deserves more play, when we talked earlier, was Zinnia's Resolve. So if you're wondering, if you haven't really seen this card very much and you're wondering what the heck this does, why it would be so good in a Lost Box deck, it's a supporter. You can only play this card if you discard two other cards from your hand, but then you draw a card for each of your opponent's Pokemon in play. So many decks are filling up the bench. You got Mew VMAX, Maridon, Lost Box decks, like so many decks just have full benches, right? So you sat there and you're like, okay, well, I'll just discard two and draw six. That's like amazing in a deck that like wants as big of a hand as possible. Discarding two cards is like, you know, an ultra ball to draw six. Yes, please.
It's great, especially when you're a deck that plays Battle VIP Pass. Right, because we know when you have battle VIP pass in your hand on turn two, it is a literal dead card that you can only use off of refinements, off of, you know, what's the other card that I'm Ultra Ball, you had just mentioned it. So Zinnia's yep. Resolve is really, really cool to filter your hand a bit of the stuff that you need, while also, like you mentioned, in this format providing such insane draw. At times, you know, six cards is nothing to scoff at, especially if your hand is really, really good, right? Research may not be a viable option. I mean, there's no research in this deck, but you might not want to research in a certain situation because you have too many valuable cards in your hand, too many valuable resources that you don't want to miss out on. So Zinnia's Resolve, really, really cool.
Yeah, the only thing that when I saw Christian in the last batch that he played in, so obviously mm-hmm. he did really well. This could just be like sometimes you get unlucky, but there's no hand disruption to your opponent in this deck. That's the one thing that I don't know how much you would change about the deck going on after this. It is a toolbox deck, and it will inevitably continually evolve towards was a toolbox deck too. Mm-hmm. But that's the one card that I can imagine wanting to find a spot for. Is like a Roxanne, probably, even like one Roxanne, which the other Lost Box deck played, can really create a situation where like you may not be able to win this turn, but you know you can win the following turn and you're like in a tight prize race with your opponent, which this deck is likely to be in with all these two prizers. So like in that situation, you're like, I just need my opponent to whiff one turn. And without any sort of hand disruption, you could very easily be in a situation where like my opponent has 15 cards in hand. They've got to have it. So that's the only thing I would adjust for my personal liking in this list. But hey, I didn't get fourth.
I'm trying to think of what you exactly would change. There are two attackers that we haven't talked about in this list. Galarian Moltres V. That's a card we haven't talked about in a while. I feel like with that energy acceleration from the discard pile and those dark energies, and then being able to hit for 190, and then also Raikou V, which is a card we have talked about a lot, but very still surprising, I feel like, to see in a list like this.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the heavy bench format could be a good attacker in a lot of situations. So I feel like if there had to be a cut for like one single Iono or a Roxanne or something like that, I feel like it might have to go the Galarian Moltres V. The Galarian Moltres V is very difficult, though, because in in dark type prevalent matchups, right, where you want to use your Roaring Moon, where you want to use your Galarian Moltres, Galarian Moltres is nice because it's like self-sufficient. You don't necessarily have to use a Mirage Gate on it, you know, after a little bit if you set it up. So, or it could be one of those things where you don't have to single hand attachment. There is also a scenario where you Galarian Moltres accelerated energy, Raihan accelerate another energy, and then attach from hand, and there's your three energies for turn. Or you could do like a Raihan Mirage Gate, or you could do a Mirage Gate hand attachment. Like, there's so much flexibility with that card that, yeah, it does 30 damage to itself, but it doesn't put itself at 30 HP like Roaring Moon does, right? Especially if there's a stadium that you want to play, you don't want to get rid of your town store or whatever, but you don't want to put your Roaring Moon that can KO literally anything at 30 HP left in the active. So Galarian Moltres V is like a cool backup dark type attacker for very niche situations. But I feel like that might be the card that you cut out in this list. I don't know. I haven't tested it at all.
It's a tough one. I'm looking at the list too. I can't really find anything that I would love to cut because like maybe, you know, you think maybe I could cut one battle VIP pass, but like if you're not running four, that just feels bad. Yeah, I don't know. But play around with the list. For the folks out there, play around with it. You know, and you'll find what works for your play style, I guess.
I feel like I should mention this as well with our list. If you want to play around with the list, maybe you're especially a listener of the podcast, not a watcher of the podcast. Reminder that in the description, we do have a link that where we upload the deck list that we showcase that you can click on in the show notes, the description, whatever, and you can copy the deck list, paste it into PTCGL, things of that nature. So just wanted to FYI on that, because I feel like it's been a while since we talked about that, but we're still doing it. So want to direct people to that. But
so Jake,
there's been what
I was going to say. So that was one surprise deck, right? But what other surprise deck has come out of this format that you have been thinking about or have your eye on?
I don't know if I want to say surprise, but the essentially what I would call a comeback of Rapid Strike Urshifu in the last couple weeks. So Rapid Strike Urshifu, I think, is very interesting. It took the sixth and seventh place spot in the regional. So like we've talked about time and time again, you know, like Maraidon this, Maraidon that. And so Urshifu really capitalizes on that. But Rapid Strike box, I guess you could say, with the Inteleon or the Urshifu, really, I think, does a good job at just like being flexible with different scenarios, with different options, you know, manipulating those damage counters to get the yoga loop going on, like just really, really cool options, I feel like. So it's really nice to see that in a format which has Roaring Moon, and Roaring Moon has somewhat been popular, not necessarily as a standalone deck, but in a Lost Box deck. And you kind of are afraid of that. And with Iron Hands in format two, right, your weakness in terms of your Octilleries and stuff are definitely super viable to be pinned down by an Iron Hands that not only gives up two prizes like, you know, other Lost Box decks, but also is just like a huge part of your game plan, right? Octillery is a huge portion of what you're trying to do every single turn. So it hurts a little bit more than if an opponent was taking away a Comfey, I feel like, in Lost Box decks. So in my opinion, and I don't think this is what you were alluding to, Sean. I mean, Rapid Strike, Urshifu, and Inteleon. Oh, this was? Oh, I thought it was a different deck. Well, then have two decks that are big surprises. But
well, no, I think this is a great example, right? Of like, you know, like you said, Urshifu is not, it's not a surprise that the card itself is good, but it kind of constantly is going in and out of formats, I have found. Like it needs, I don't know, the right set of circumstances. And it feels like between Lost Box being popular, so that really makes Inteleon VMAX, which has the ability that allows you to discard a water and place damage counters on two of your opponent's Pokemon. Like you said, that ability plus Medicham is a recipe for success, against Lost Box. And then against other decks, you're either going to hit for weakness with Urshifu, you're going to do a decent amount of damage with Inteleon while being gigantic, or you're going to Technical Machine Devolution them and then win the game that way. So, yeah, it's definitely like it's cool to see this deck coming back, in my opinion.
And it also had just accelerated in this specific regional. It basically doubled the amount of day two placements, I will say, among like the top 82 or whatever, 6th, 7th, 27th, 35th, 39th, 42nd, and 77th. So
Wow.
five in the top 50 is double or even higher than that, really, a little bit more than double any other event since LAIC a month ago. So this is the fourth event if you include LAIC within the last month. So just really, really cool to see that deck just come up once again. Definitely was a surprise to me.
And I think in the same vein as this one, I don't think really anybody saw quite the combination of Iron Valiant Entei in Paradox Rift. Like, I think, it wasn't a surprise that Iron Valiant might be good, but everybody was playing it with Urshifu, like myself included, right? Like, that was my thought. And then, obviously the Entei version comes out and everybody's like mind blown. Oh my God, this is amazing. And, I think it's leveled off a little bit after its regional
It
win, but
definitely has leveled off since
yeah.
LAIC.
But it was a very, like, it was a pretty interesting defining deck to be like, oh, this is the format we're playing in now, right? Where damage counter placement actually matters. And, a very efficient attacker is really good. And I don't know, it's just those sort of combinations of things to me have been very, they're both playing in a very similar space. So I think that was interesting in like how popular and important damage counter and spread damage really is in the format right now. Like if you have a deck that can do that, it feels like you are, I don't know, like it's a good strategy. And then like we'll see, how many, new cards get printed with spread abilities. Pokemon is usually pretty hesitant to print too many good spread damage cards because it can tend to break the game a little bit. But
They're and also what's interesting is the winning list that we went over, Christian's list, played Jirachi, which is a card that we haven't really seen, I feel like, a ton of. And so now, like you mentioned, with Iron Valiant's rise and what I was mentioning with Rapid Strike Urshifu's sort of presence, and especially Sableye and just Lost Box in general, maybe now it's the time to start putting Jirachis in your decks, right? Maybe that's the winning recipe.
maybe. I mean, Jirachi won't stop Inteleon or Iron Valiant because
Oh
it's an
no, it won't. Yeah,
because it's an
it won't.
ability and not an attack. But it does stop Sableye, which makes sense. For me, like taking Jirachi out of Lost Box always felt bad because Lost Box is popular enough that like an opposing Sableye is terrifying. So I think if you're not running Lost Box yourself, you probably don't have to worry as much about Sableye. Like, I guess if you're playing Charizard and you really want to farm Lost Box hard, you can throw in a Jirachi and then be like, I don't know how you're ever doing anything to my deck, but like,
You're
seems
just gonna have to
unnecessary.
face it head on.
Right. That's, it seems a bit excessive, but fine. But yeah, those to me, those two like kind of decks are surprises. I'm trying to think, Jake, if there are any other particular surprises? Like there's Lost Box, and then there's these like weird damage spread decks.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think Cloth and Electrode. I feel like that's a really, really cool surprise. I mean, we've seen bits and pieces, right? We saw some stream game at LAIC. Gdansk had someone. Brisbane had Jack Underwood getting top 20, you know, just missing out of the top 16 at 17th with it. And then Stuttgart had four in day two. Four of them in day two. Now, they didn't place any higher than 45th, but this is kind of like the memeiest deck of the format, and it actually works. It's actually like a viable deck. It's, I would say it's arguably one of the more fun decks in the format. Just doing the damage to yourself, the status conditions, and doing it to your opponent and hitting big numbers with weird Pokemon like Cloth and Electrode, ones that we don't really see a ton. And so getting double now the placements of any other event that it's been a part of, I don't know, it's just really, really cool to see. And it's definitely a surprise to me. It is definitely the budget deck of the format. If you are looking to get into the game, if you're looking to build a cheap deck, a cheap new deck to play, I think this is the deck that you would want to do. A lot of new cards in there. The Galarian Electrode is a promo in a box, I believe, so that's pretty cheap. I've seen the box littered around, you know, card shops and like local Targets and stuff like that, so you could probably find it pretty easily.
Yeah.
If you want to actually buy the boxes.
It's definitely a fun deck. I think it's a weird one, and whenever I've played against it, there's somebody at my locals who plays it, and
The Cricket Wireless?
Yeah, the Cricket Wireless. We play that, and it's always a close game. I don't know if he's just been unlucky. Maybe the deck needs a little bit of luck. You know, it's a weird one because you're using status conditions. You're using unusual attackers that your ability to do the right amount of damage is so dependent on several other cards. Because it's kind of a combo deck if you think about it in terms of Pokemon, like Pokemon style, which it's like, okay, in order to do this Cloth attack, I need Cloth, I need double turbo, and I need a status condition on my opponent's Pokemon. And in order to get that, I need Brute Bonnet, which has an ancient booster capsule, and preferably a Radiant Hisuian Sneasler. It's like, oh my gosh, like the number of cards on the field that you need to do the proper attack with this one card is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different cards. I'm like, that's silly. So in that respect, I would say that might be the thing that makes the deck vulnerable, is because it's like, you know, you're putting together several Lego pieces for your deck to work. But if you can get it working, like you basically can play this as a single prize deck that hits a lot of damage for the most part. And then you have Hisuian Electrode, which can kind of come in and either clean up or start the game with a big 2-prize knockout if you need it. So weird, cool, love it. It's like, to me, like this is like the Reggies of this format.
It really is. It definitely is the Reggies of this format. 100%. Just now plays the 2-prize Pokemon.
Yeah, just you know, a couple, but it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Just a little bit. One of the things that has somewhat surprised me in the last month as well is the downfall of Lugia. You know, we saw Lugia, and a lot of people played Lugia. Lugia, very, very popular deck overall. Since its tenure, regional top eights is 60, including 8 wins, and international top eights is 13, including 1 win. So a deck that has been very prevalent in our meta. But now, as we've jumped into Paradox Rift, right, LAIC, no Lugia deck got over 80th, right? Only 2 people made it within the top spots, really, of Brisbane, 35th and 40th. And then one person made day 2 at Stuttgart with Lugia. So this like whole transition away from Lugia now, because, you know, Iron Hands has been a prevalent card and a good deck, but like it has not been the end all be all, right? I think we can all say that the paranoia of the card when it was being announced was overhyped for sure. Maridon being prevalent in the format, just Lugia just really dipping away. And I think Maridon's Excel really has sparked this, especially. And that's like another surprise in itself. Like, I didn't expect Mirrodin to continue to dominate. We knew it was going to be a good deck, right? But I mean, it's been so popular and it's been really, really good, and it's been cheap to get too. So a lot of people are playing it right now. And especially when you have like people like JW, Flex Daddy, and Andrew Mahone, like constantly hyping him up, like there's going to be a huge following from not only the top tables, right? You know, JW winning an event with it, a major with it, but also, you know, like down to your grassroots locals as well. So I don't know. It's just Lugia going away was just so shocking considering how good it was, and getting Mew EX as well.
Yeah, definitely was not on my bingo card. Mew, yeah. I think we had it. I looked at our predictions for Paradox Rift, and mm-hmm. we had it as S tier when we talked to Jared, and it was S tier, right, with Gardevoir. And you could maybe argue Gardevoir isn't quite S tier, but it's still a great deck. I'm not going to actually knock Gardevoir, but that one.
But like, holy smokes, we were wrong about Lugia.
Yeah, Lugia.
We looked dumb.
Oh, but yeah. Egg on our face.
We'll be the first to admit that.
But I think you're absolutely right. Like, the reason that Lugia has struggled so much is that Mirrodin has been so good. And even Lost Box, right? Every now and again, Lost Box will play a Raikou too. And it's just like, you know, this is just so bad for Lugia.
And now we have Lost Box decks playing Iron Hands.
Right. And
for Reckless, like, you know.
It's horrible, right? It's just not the kind of game that you want to be playing. So I think that you're spot on with why Lugia has sort of fallen off. I think another deck.
I feel like also, just to continue on that, I feel like the slight explosion of Iron Valiant also kind of hinders that deck. Talking about like Yoga Loop and talking about like damage pings, like think about like you can only get two Archeops in the game, and those two Archeops gotta live, right? Yeah. But especially like a boss in a Yoga Loop can end the game right away.
Yeah,
it feels like as a Lugia player, because you can only summoning star once.
You know,
so it's like that's another thing that we didn't even talk about. That's like, oh my gosh, I had this realization of like, oh, you know, maybe Lugia, man.
Yeah, especially with Countercatcher now too, because like you don't even have to boss; you can just Countercatcher the Archeops up, and it's fine. I think that leads into the other deck that has really. I'm like looking at these top tables, Jake, and I almost don't even see it, which is Chen Pao. Chen Pao is also just nowhere to be seen on these day twos. And I think it's for the exact same reason as Lugia, in terms of you need Baxcalibur for that deck to do anything. And unlike Archeops, like Archeops, you can kind of, if you're worried about it getting knocked out, you can like bank extra energy elsewhere before it dies. Baxcalibur and Chen Pao doesn't really do that. Like you could, but like, if you got to blow something up this big, you're not always going to have access to like 10 energy to bank four elsewhere for later. And in the same way, like if your opponent knocks out one or two Baxcalibur's in a game, it doesn't matter if they're not taking a lot of prizes. If you're just out of ways to accelerate energy, you just lose. And I think that's probably the same reason. So for me, that's the other big surprise in this format, is that just Chen Pao just seems to have like, here's a cliff, and we just pushed it right off the cliff.
And it's not necessarily, just to build on that a little more, it's not necessarily that Chen Pao has completely gone away. It's that it's now transformed away from this Baxcalibur build and now is like a Tekken Palkia. Right? Like we talked about previously in an episode, you know, Palkia V-Star being a deck. I believe it was after like Gdansk. I think it was the Ice Rider VMAX Chen Pao. Palkia V-Star build. And so now it's just a way to get energies. It's almost like a replacement of the Capacious Bucket, right? Where it just gets energies for you now, and that's its main duty. So it's really interesting as well. And I agree with you, you know, I was a Chen Pao player. I liked playing Chen Pao, especially before I moved to Las Vegas. Like I was playing it at the locals, ask any of the Kentucky guys. But like it's now shifted away from that into this Palkia build and moving away from Baxcalibur because of the reasons that you just mentioned. Like, Baxcalibur is now like a liability.
Liability.
So that one also, like, I didn't think about that until right now, but no, I mean, I kind of agreed with it because, like, Chin Pao's kind of had this, like, slow morph and transformation and, like, molding into what it is now.
Yeah. I can't think of any other decks that I'm particularly surprised about how they've gone away. The format is really diverse right now, but Jake, you seem like you might have something. Do you have another deck?
It's not necessarily a deck that's gone away, but Snorlax Stall being very prevalent, I feel like. You know, we talked about the winning list in Gdask, and then Brisbane had two of them in the top eight, right? And then even though Stuttgart didn't have as many in the top eight, they only got as high as 14th. There were still four decks within the top 62 decks. And, you know, in a best of three format, right, 50 minute best of three, where it could just be tough. And so it's been a while since we've seen a control deck. We'll probably never get to a control deck the way that Pidgeotto Oranguru was. And I've just been chasing that high ever since. The Snorlax deck has been that closest feeling to it. And it has been just really cool to see. Even though a lot of people hate playing it against it, and, you know, it's definitely a fraction of its former self, its shadow, but it's just really, really cool to see that deck go, because, again, like I mentioned, it was so bleak for us control fans. Now it feels like we have something viable. I think even like Dark Side Games over here local in Vegas had a big cup recently, and I think Snorlax either won or was definitely in the top tables at a local scene. And for anyone who goes to like locals cups and challenges, usually there's not a lot of like control people in those, because the rules don't really favor control in those like best of one type challenges.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know. It's the kind of deck where, like, I think you could take it to any event. And if you get, I don't even think it has to be that good of a matchup, but if you just play against people who haven't thought about Snorlax as a deck they have to play against, they might play either very incorrectly, or they may not have cards in their deck that really help. Like, you know, I don't know how many people are actually playing Minior. Like,
we know at least one person.
Well, yeah, one, exactly. But like, most people aren't going to play Minior, to be honest. They don't see the deck as that big of a meta threat. So I think you could still very easily take the deck, be, you know, lean into your villain era at your locals, and then, you know, have a good time. That's big air quotes for everybody out there listening.
Well, it's a good time for you. It's not a good time for anybody else. You know, you're going to have a great time because you're going to play a lot of Pokemon cards, right? You're going to constantly shuffle and play a lot of cards, but your opponent's not going to do anything. Yeah, I would say that is probably my final deck to see of like the rise and fall kind of categories.
Yeah.
Are we still surprised that Mew is still around?
I've stopped being surprised about Mew. Mew is just like till the day it rotates. It's going to be on a high from the day that it launched till the day that it rotates. I can't think of the last card I can think of that had that level of success for that long, probably Pikachu and Zekrom tag team. That card was,
or that deck, archetype in general,
was basically good for as long as it was in format. There might have been a small window when it wasn't great, but I mean, the same can be said about Mew a little bit. But yeah, like, that's the last time that there was a deck whose whole thing was just like dominating.
So I was going to say, outside of that, you know, cards that have been super dominant all the time in the last like 10 years or so. I mean, I didn't even think of Pinkerum first. I thought of Seismitoad EX and Mewtwo EX, X-Ball Mewtwo.
Yeah, I mean, that or Zoroark GX.
Yeah, like Zoroark, but that, and then it goes into like, okay, but Zoroark was so many different archetypes,
yeah,
right? Like,
really
you, like you had Zorodesi, you had Zorotails, you had Robin Scholl's Zoroark GX, you mm-hmm. know, Victory Map deck. Like, you had so many different archetypes with that card. And the same can be said about like X-Ball. I mean, X-Ball Mewtwo, I think, if you want, for anybody who maybe is newer to the game, like Sean and I, and newer as in like, you know, right before the pandemic kind of deal, if you want a history lesson in the Pokemon TCG, look up like YouTube videos and documentaries, or, well, I don't know if they're documentaries, but at least people talking on YouTube videos about the Mewtwo Wars. X-Ball Mewtwo. Just any deck, every deck played Mewtwo EX, and I think it was double colorless energy is what it was, right? Because we have double turbo now. Yeah, we have double turbo now, but double colorless energy. Like, just whoever played Mewtwo first.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, yeah, that's it for me too, Jake. So if you if you want to sign us out, and we'll hopefully something, some interesting news will happen between now and next week. Fingers crossed.
That's going to be all for the Metapod podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. Thanks for listening this week. Glad to be back. I'm Jake, that's Sean, and we'll see you next week.